This is Morgan Michael, welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness, together by challenging our assumptions and venturing beyond the status quo in education. We can make a big impact, one small act at a time.
We can't passively forget that something is scary. We have to actively learn that it isn't anymore.
Stephanie Faye Frank offers neuroscience education that leads organization-wide mindset shifts and innovation through her online videos, podcasts, and her consulting services. She uses her award-winning research in neuroscience and fieldwork as a counselor and educator and consultant to maximize our brain's creative power. She implements interactive strategies to bring these concepts to life within the classroom. For more information, visit mindsetneuroscience.com. In part three of my interview with Stephanie Faye Frank, we talk about the importance of developing beginner's mind as teachers, as a way to teach growth mindset from the context of our own experience. Sounds scary, right? Well, it doesn't have to be. Stephanie shares a few really easy and tangible ways that you can train your brain to be more adaptable, whether you want to help your students to grow or whether you want to develop beginner's mind yourself. Struggle is an essential part of learning. Lean in. So I would like to talk about this idea of cultivating beginner's mind in teachers and the sense of creating authentic growth mindset through our own experiences, and then being able to impart that on our students and maybe even tell stories of the whole process, whether it's exposing some of our vulnerabilities around trying something new or otherwise. But why is it important for us as educators to experience new things and to experience what it's like to actually have a beginner's mind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an important question. I think so. There's a couple of layers to that. The first is that something I call the biofeedback of authenticity. When we are trying to teach anybody anything, they need to feel willing to learn from us. That's one of the first things a lot of people don't really consider, is that a person has to be willing to be influenced by us. And part of that willingness is going to come from a level of trust. And that level of trust is going to come partly from the signals that we're sending. And some of those signals that we're sending is reliant on how authentically we are speaking in that moment. When we talk about something from a very conceptual level, what tends to happen is, and I've seen this a lot with growth mindset, people have learned about it. They haven't lived it and they haven't experimented with it themselves. They've learned about it. They heard that it's this really good thing and they immediately want to jump to teaching it. Mm-hmm. So I call it the learn, internalize, teach approach. They learn about it, but they skip over internalizing and they go right to teach. And mm-hmm. part of the problem with that is that when you haven't truly experimented and lived something and experienced the reality of it, if you haven't done that, you have to kind of rely on another person's words, another person's example, the research they've done, and these kind of buzzwords and little activities. And that isn't really that authentic because it's not dynamic, and it's not dynamic in each moment, because you can't really flex when you're using someone else's words. You don't have another example to give. You don't have another story. Mm-hmm. And so people can read that. And I've heard that from many different audiences where, you know, even the supervisor will talk about the importance of growth mindset, but you can hear that it's kind of canned. It's mm-hmm. like they've just heard those words. And so they're saying it. They're not giving any of their own authentic examples of it. And people tune out. Yeah. And so, you know, we do send, just like in I was saying before, every single thing we do is a projection of these tiny little biosignals. And so if we aren't truly living something, those will be sent out and people will detect those. So the internalizing part, what is really important about that is that it gives and actually let me take one step back on that. The other really important thing I think is for people to understand about growth mindset is you never actually have to use the word growth mindset ever. I taught the idea of neuroplasticity, which is really what we're talking about, I taught the idea of the changeability, the adaptability of the mind and the brain for years. And I was drawing, you know, pictures of neurons and myelination and changing all that. I was doing that for years and had never heard of growth mindset. Huh. And I saw changes in the students that were coming to me. I was a school counselor for a while and doing workshops for students. I saw them change in front of my eyes almost, you know, based on this knowledge that, wow, I can change my brain. Like, it doesn't have to be this way. I don't have to react this way every time. Mm-hmm. And so I did that without ever knowing about the word growth mindset, had never heard of it. It was just based on neuroplasticity. So one thing I would say is that if you're using the word growth mindset too much, it might be that you haven't internalized it enough, because that's just a concept and it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. What it really is reflecting is the power of the mind, the neuroplasticity, the changeability of our mind, how much experience can change our brain architecture, the fact that struggle is a really important part of learning. And so that, you know, actual mistakes are part of what grow our brain, because it means that we've, you know, left some of the myelinated territory in our brain and we have to venture out into new territory. And so what the first part about being kind of more authentic and internalizing it to me is to understand more, a little bit more about the neuroscience. If we're talking about the brain and we're talking about intelligence, I think it's really important to know a little bit more about the brain and how it works. And also for me, it's not just about the brain, it's the mind, body, brain system, mm-hmm. but to know more about how plastic and adaptable and changeable we are, and then to experiment in our own lives. So it can be anything, simple things, like some of the activities that I did for myself first, because I was trying to basically rewire my own brain.
Yes.
You know, so I did my own visualizations of things and meditations and practicing on different relationships that I had, where I always got really, really, really defensive. And so I would visualize myself not being defensive. Mm. And it took months and months and months. And I made very little progress for many, many, many months. And then eventually I did see change. And so that part is part of why I feel so passionate. And I think it's so authentic when I talk about it, is that I live it and I did it for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to share those examples with people. And then even practicing on really simple things like picking up my bag with another hand for 3 weeks straight, putting my pants on. Like we will automatically put our pants on with the same leg every day and never think about it. It's all automated.
I've never thought about that.
Right? And it's just all of these things are so automated and we don't even think about it. But even just challenging ourselves, because it requires a moment of awareness and it requires a moment of choice. It's just a small one, but it's a little choice that we can make to change some of our automated patterns. So those were some of the things I would have students do for 3 weeks straight. Use a different leg to put your pants on, and pick up your bag with another hand. And they would tell me, wow, after 3 weeks, I don't even think about it. It's automated to be the other leg now. Wow. They changed the pathway. And so that was really eye-opening for them. They got like an actual feeling, a real lived experience of change happens. Change is possible,
right?
You know, and we have so many automated ways of doing things. And it's not to say automation is good. We need to have some automation. Otherwise, we'd be ridiculous people, you know, like we'd never know how to do anything.
Yes.
But it's just a matter of like, we have so much of it that we're not aware of. And it's nice to know that, oh, just by doing something in a new way and then repeating that enough times to get over it being uncomfortable, that eventually that new way can be comfortable too.
Wow.
So yeah, so those are little things that a teacher can do for themselves and do it for themselves either in parallel to teaching it or a little bit before they start teaching. The idea of growth mindset and neuroplasticity, do some of those things yourself first, just to see, like, you know, grab your purse or your bag with a different hand for 2 weeks straight, just to see if you're even able to do it.
Yes.
And then you can share that story.
And what a brilliant, I just think that's such a brilliant, tangible example of how we can develop that within ourselves. Because I think sometimes there's this perception that we have to go all in and we need to set this crazy goal, you know, to go and perform in front of an audience of 200, because that's been your biggest fear, and to start right at the top and then probably inevitably freak out and quit or fail miserably in front of a giant crowd and when the stakes are really high. And I just really appreciate appreciate this idea of these small concentric circles where we can start small and see the progress and build on that. Even if it's even if it's, you know, left hand to right hand with your purse.
Exactly.
But these little things do add credibility to the whole practice of growth mindset and in a really safe, low stakes way. So I really appreciate that. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, great. I'm so glad. Yeah.
So I do want to wrap it up, and I have two concluding questions for you that are fairly short. But before I do, is there anything that you'd like to add to the conversation that maybe you need to touch on that you haven't had a chance to delve into?
Something that's becoming much more important in my own work is something called embodied cognition. And it's just this idea that we have been very neuro everything. Well, maybe not other people, but in my circles, all about the brain, the brain, the brain, the brain. And we have, many people have neglected the importance of the senses and the body. And what we just, a lot of people have known for a long time, especially kind of motor and sensory, you know, researchers, the body itself has intelligence. The cells of our body have intelligence. Our senses make almost these little micro decisions. Senses are, in a way, the gatekeeper to what comes into our awareness. And so instead of only thinking about our thoughts all the time, and, you know, that's kind of what you're saying too, when we're talking about applying growth mindset to something more tangible, we can bring it back into our body instead of only thinking about, oh, I got to change my thought pattern all the time. That can be very hard and very abstract, especially the younger the person, that will be very hard. But if we can kind of come back to just doing some things more intentionally with our body, that helps kind of bring that awareness, and just to acknowledge too that our bodies and our senses have an incredible amount of intelligence. And so that's what can help with, like, even thinking about the conditions in our classroom and adding some movement and sensory experiences to our learning is so powerful. I'm sure people have heard that before, but it really is that our cells actually have a lot of intelligence to them, not just in our brain, but even in our, they call it the enteric nervous system, you know, our gut, our heart. There's little almost decision-making in a very casual sense. There's this, you know, these kind of thresholds that are being created. So yeah, it's just, I think that's, it'll be important for us to continue to think about not just the brain. It's not an isolated system. It's this entire giant. And I would even say the mind is not just, has not only to do with our brain. The mind is the system that's happening between us and other people, you know? So it's
That makes a lot of sense. And I think beyond just kinesthetic learning style, but the fact that we actually internalize a lot of our learning through our bodies without our conscious conception of it. So that's really interesting. Yeah. Yeah. What does kindness mean to you?
I think kindness is offering someone the space and acceptance to create and be what they want in that moment. Mm-hmm. And so there's no magic formula of what it looks. It's very emergent and dynamic. And I think it's different things at different times. It could be having very high expectations in one moment and being totally soft and gentle in another moment. Mm. So it's just kind of giving that space and acceptance to a person to just be and create what they want in each moment.
Great. And finally, if you were to print a quote on one of those cups that are sold in big bookstores across the world, what quote or message would you print?
There's actually two, if I can pick two.
Yeah,
so one of them is from Robert Sapolsky. He's an amazing neuroscience and primatology researcher from Stanford. And the quote is, "We can't passively forget that something is scary. We have to actively learn that it isn't anymore."
Wow.
And so, you know, so many of us are afraid of so many things, and we have to actively learn that they're not. So that's one. And the other one is a Chinese proverb, and it is, "The person who says it cannot be done should not interrupt the person doing it."
Mm, really good. Stephanie, this has been a pleasure and a joy and so informative. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you. And thank you so much for all the work you're doing. I think that this idea of kindness is just incredibly important, and I'm so excited that you're bringing it to more people and giving them just that idea to even think about.
I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes, and leave a review. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag smallactbigimpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.